Thank you. Thank you all so much for coming to our workshop, Storytelling from the Bar to the Boardroom. Let me introduce myself. I'm Kevin Allison, and I was on a sketch comedy team called The State. Thank you. We had our own show on MTV in the 90s, and 2.5 years ago, I became obsessed with a different kind of entertainment, and that is true storytelling. I started a live show and a podcast called Risk, where people tell true stories that they never thought they'd dare to share in public. So we've had a lot of silly stories on the show, a lot of people talking about, you know, being on LSD in church and crapping their pants. And we've had a lot of shockingly, jaw-droppingly emotional stories that you would never hear on NPR, like people going into graphic detail about the death of a family member or how they were molested as a child, that sort of thing. So it really, it's all over the spectrum from the sacred to the profane, the profound to the ridiculous, and it's really changed my life. So I started teaching true storytelling shortly after I started the podcast and started a school called thestorystudio.org. And we started off just teaching storytelling for stage the way we do as entertainment. But over time, we've had so many people coming to us interested in employing storytelling in different contexts, saying, how could I even use some of these personal stories I'm used to telling to friends and family, but apply them to a career sort of situation, like a job interview or lunch out with a client or during a presentation? So we've begun to realize that you can recontextualize any story and arrive at an important point that you can make for people. And it's the most memorable way to make any progress with your communication. So Chris Castiglione was one of my first students at the Story Studio. And one of the first exercises we do is that I ask everyone to think of a time that you really shined or you really blew it. Think of a time when you were really emotionally riled up. You were really invested in how it was going to turn out. You were really excited, or you were really nervous, or you were just obsessed, weren't quite sure how it was going to shake out, and you cared a lot. And so I asked Chris in one of our first classes to think of a story like that, and he's going to share one like that. It's only about 2.5, 3 minutes long, and I want all of us in the room to be thinking of a similar 2 to 3 minute story of a time you shined or you really blew it, because you'll be thinking about that throughout the rest of the hour as we go through various exercises. And at the end, we want a few people to share them up here, their 2 or 3 minute stories. And we have a Risk show at the convention center at 4 today. And we thought that we could choose, of the few people we have come up here to share a 2 or 3 minute story, choose our favorite to actually include in the Risk show happening later today. So, that said, let's hear Chris's story about a time he shined or a time he blew it.
Yeah, I'll use this.
Solving problems, there we go. Yeah, so my story of when I more like blew it or shone, I was 10 and I really wanted to be an actor, and that was because I had seen Home Alone. And I thought Macaulay Culkin was so cool, right? And the only problem with me being an actor was that I had big nerdy glasses and I was really quiet and just, you know, just too shy. Like, I could never tell anyone or do anything about it. I just thought I would be on the streets of New York City one day with my parents and that I would see Macaulay Culkin and I'd say, hey, I want to be in one of your movies. And he'd say, yeah, cool, that's great. And then I literally thought that was how it was going to happen. So my mom surprises me one day and she says, Chris, do you want to go see a taping of Sesame Street? Because my uncle was the cameraman on Sesame Street. And I thought, that's awesome. There's going to be real actors there. Maybe this is my chance. I mean, it's not Macaulay Culkin, but, you know, this might be the big deal. We go to Queens, where Sesame Street is, and we show up. And, dude, it's awesome because there's Snuffleupagus is, like, humongous. And there's Elmo and there's Gordon and Maria. And just everyone's there. And it was super exciting. My uncle asks my mom, I hear him over ask, he says, hey, one of the kids didn't show up today. Do you think Chris could maybe fill in? And right then, I was just like really excited, but really nervous. I thought, okay, I could do this. I'm 10, right? And so I get on stage, and I only have one line. I have to feed Big Bird, which is ridiculous. And I have to say, hey, Big, like I'm screwing it up now. Hey, Big Bird, here's some bird seed. That's all I have to say, right? I did it pretty well right there. That wasn't bad, right? But the way it came out was more like, hey, Big Bird, here's some bird seed. And like Big Bird was like sad. I mean, not that he could make that face, but he was sad for me. I tried it two or three more times. Cameras, action. I'm hungry. Over and over again. I'm looking out in the crowd. And my uncle's on the camera. He's at the camera just like smoking a cigarette because you could do that back in the day. Just angry. And my mom, arms crossed, really just disappointed in me, or so it seemed. And I thought, okay, I just have to pretend to do this. If I can fake it, I can get through this. I can go home and it'll all be over. And so Big Bird says, I'm hungry. And here's your bird seed, Big Bird. And he's like, that's terrific. It was amazing. And so that day, I just realized, you know, I mean, I kind of was acting in a way, but I just realized that if I could fake it, kind of like fake it till you make it, is that what they say? But I do remember going home that day and thinking, wow, I really never want to be an actor. So thanks. Yep.
This one, I can't.
Yeah. So we need to take your lava.
Take it. Do I use this one now?
Yep.
Okay, great. okay, so great. So the next thing we're going to do is just choose a partner to your left or your right or in front of you or behind you. We just want to do a little icebreaking here to tell someone next to you who you are and why you're here. So this shouldn't take more than literally like a minute or a minute and a half. Okay, now, and then you do... Oh, fine.
I'll get this right back to you.
Okay, so I should
stop
him
now.
Yeah. Okay, guys. All right. So now I want to talk about considering your ideas. And you might want to think in terms of, oh, what did I really come here for? That might give you some insight into the kind of story you'd like to focus on today. Or if you don't have anything specific in mind, you can just think broadly of... what is a time that I shined or a time that I blew it? Now, there are other things you can keep in mind. For example, some people like to think in terms of extremes in their lives, right? Like first times, best times, worst times. My first kiss, my best moment in high school, my worst public embarrassment, that sort of thing. You can just go on listing those sorts of things as story prompts for yourself that you can turn to at any time. So now I want everyone to just take like 2 minutes to think of times you were especially emotionally caught up in something, weren't sure how it was going to turn out, how you were going to make it through, and we're either super excited or super nervous or just super caught up in it somehow emotionally, and how it might make an interesting story that you might be able to tell in 2 or 3 minutes. Do some brainstorming on that and see if you can land on one. And so for 2 minutes, just jot some ideas down. All righty.
All right, you guys got some ideas down? Also, I know some people get some worksheets. Really, it's just a blank piece of paper that says that at the top, and it's just kind of an outline. If you don't have one, just doodle it or iPhone it or whatever. Great. Well, keep working on those ideas. The next thing we're going to talk about is scene versus summary. So scene is this idea. It's more of a conceptual idea, and you see it in a lot of 19th century literature, for example. Like, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Summary.
Thank you. That's summary. We're just kind of summarizing, kind of conceptually, like, what's going to happen here? Scene is more, it takes you into the moment, right? So maybe you're walking down the street, and you have your headphones on, and you're thinking what you're going to do next, and then all of a sudden, there's a car crash. And boom, and your heart starts racing, and you start thinking all these thoughts. It, like, brings you to that moment. It's like as if the camera kind of zooms into that moment. So those are the two extremes that we have here. It's kind of like when you're telling a joke. There's a lot of exposition as the summary that you're saying, like, she woke up, she went to the doctor, she got the pills, she took a good night's sleep, you know, three guys went to a bar, this kind of thing. You're setting it up. But then when you get to the juicy part, it kind of slows down a little bit. It goes a little more step by step. And then she got back to the doctor, and the doctor said, "Mrs. Sullivan, what's wrong with you?" And she says, "I did everything you told me to do." You see, it just kind of pulls it into that moment a little bit more. There was a study done in the 70s at the University of Chicago about how effective therapy treatment was. And they thought that they were studying the therapists, but it actually turned out that it was the patients and how the patients, whether they were going through a summary or a scene and how they told their story of how effective it was. So, for example, if you think of like a Vietnam vet or something talking about, okay, I was over there in Vietnam and I, you know, killed a lot of people and ate a lot of food and, you know, they whatever. This is random, but I'm riffing here. And they're going through these ideas of the past, but it's a little bit different. Think about the scene if you're thinking, man, I was just sitting there on the beach and holding her as she was dying and it was so sad. And I looked over at the sun and I thought, you know, why am I looking at the sun? And what, you know, all the thoughts, all the emotions and the feelings that are going through you. And a good story will have both. We'll have both scene and summary. We'll have a good mix. One way that we can develop our ideas for the scene part is to think about the six senses. And so this sixth sense idea comes from a Buddhist idea. There's this extra sense. But we have sight, sound, smell, taste, thinking mind. That's the additional one. The kind of thinking, the thoughts that are going through your head, the utterances, the quotes, the dialogue of the moment. And then feeling body. What were you feeling? My heart was racing. Like, it's one thing for me to say I was nervous, and it's another thing to say, I found myself pacing around the room. It was one thing to say, she was really mad. It's another thing to say. She walked in and she punched her fist right through the window. Ouch, right? So we want to take these six senses and we want to just write down right now the story that you're thinking of, a time you blew it or a time you shone, and just kind of write down, try to get at least like three additional, like three of the six, kind of write down and slow that moment down. And so just take 2 minutes, just jot down some notes and try to develop your story.
Right. If you can, like, think in terms of the way that an actor uses sense memory, if you can try to place yourself back in the moment you're describing and think, okay, what is the sight that sticks out in my mind the most? What was the smell that had some sort of emotional effect on me? What were literally, like, what were entire quotes of what was being said? Not just the gist of what was said. What was actually said, or how can I phrase it so that it sounds like it came out of my mother's mouth? And feeling body, some of that can be internal. Some of that can be, you know, my heart's beating super fast. I am, you know, feeling all jostled up in my stomach, all of that sort of thing. To get some details down about the juiciest parts of your story so that you can bring it alive for us emotionally with those six senses.
How you guys doing? Got our ideas? And don't be afraid to, if you guys have any questions, we'll do some questions later, but just shout out if you need more time just so we can get a feel for the room. But it looks like you guys are jotting stuff down. We're going to keep moving along, so keep following. And one more thing to add about scene and summary is as we start to structure our story, a nice way to think about it is kind of like the Christmas lights. Each of the lights is kind of the most beautiful and interesting part of the string, but the string is kind of like the summary that kind of links it all together. Would you say that's kind of
Yeah, fair? Yeah. Most people say that if you have a story that's got at least 60 or 70% scene, that's great, but you're going to need summary generally to get from big scene to big scene, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah, and so the next thing we're going to do is, like, as we're stringing along our story, there's certain beats that we're going to want to hit to make our story, to give our story the story arc. And so, Kevin, you're going to talk about the five beats?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Okay, so the thinking of story structure starts with Aristotle and the idea that a story should have a beginning, middle, and end. And then by Shakespeare's time, people started thinking in terms of five beats with the typical five-act structure that he would use. And we've kind of basically stuck there ever since. We've kind of like, in Hollywood, you'll find people using 15 beats or 24 beats, but you'll always find the five essential beats in any story, whether it's an improv scene or a sketch and sketch comedy or an oral story or an entire movie or novel. These five beats play out again and again and again on a micro and a macro level. So the most important one is probably one you've already thought through and even written down details about, and that is the climactic one, the main event, which will get to. That's the fourth beat. But let's start at the beginning. The first beat we usually need in an oral story is the setup. You're going to be able to set up information throughout the story. But the reason the first beat of any story is called setup is because you kind of gotta do a little setting up at the beginning, right? So this five-beat structure is extremely flexible. It can be bent and broken and rearranged, but this is how it usually works best. This is what our brains are so used to over the centuries. Setup is usually concerned mostly with who and where. Who usually means the protagonist, right? The character around whom all these events are happening and the character who is most pushing the events in a new direction. And in oral storytelling, the protagonist is also usually the narrator, you, right? So in Chris's story earlier, what did we need to know about him? He could have told us tons of things about him, that he had diabetes, that he, had this or that or the other problem when he was a child, that he wet the bed. None of that was important. What was important to the climax of that story was that he greatly desired becoming an actor, and he was shy. Two things about his psychology that were battling with one another and gonna become a problem. So that's what we need to know about Chris in the beginning. It set up what his deal is. Wants to be an actor and is also quite shy, okay? The where in that particular story didn't end up mattering so much. We just assumed, okay, this is little kid in suburbia, you know, middle class, that sort of thing. So it wasn't such an important world or universe or social setting that needed to be established. But sometimes you need to establish this happened at an extremely posh boarding school, or this happened at, on the deck of the Titanic the night it was sinking, a place that has a lot going on as a where. But in this case, you know, the where was not quite so important to the whole world that we were in. So that's the setup, that Chris wants to be an actor and is shy, establishes some motivation. The second beat is the inciting incident. And this is the first time in the story where we definitely are going to have a scene. There's going to be some action taking place here. There's going to be some drama here, someone saying something, someone doing something, the universe doing something to the protagonist, and it's going to be catalytic. It's going to force the protagonist into action. Maybe the rug is pulled out from under her feet, and she's like, oh my gosh, I've got to fix this. Or maybe a fantastic opportunity pops up, and she thinks, oh my God, I've got to prepare for that. Or maybe it's just something psychological happens. One day she just wakes up and she's like, oh my God, I am so sick of Cincinnati, Ohio. I've got to get out of here. All right, so that's your inciting incident. It's something that happens that incites this person, motivates them into action. And for Chris, okay, we've set up, wants to be an actor, is shy. All of a sudden, an opportunity pops up. Hey, Chris, you want to come to the set of Sesame Street? And in the setup, he had said that he kind of figured in kid logic that the way to become an actor is to run into Macaulay Culkin on the street and say, hey, I want to be an actor. And so now he hears that there's this opportunity to go to the set of Sesame Street. Macaulay Culkin might not be there, but an actor might be there. So this could be his big break. The third beat is the what we call raising the stakes. In literature, they have often called it the rising action. In improv, they call it heightening the game. They're all three pretty similar concepts. If you'll notice, all three have the exact same thing in common. They're all about escalation. They're all about things getting more and more some way. This third beat is often, one of the things to keep in mind is that it is the third beat, and it's often where the rule of threes is most often used, right? Three examples of things getting worse and worse, or more and more complicated, or sometimes in really kooky comedies, weirdly and weirdly better and better. But in any case, the plot is thickening. The protagonist is taking steps to try to get where he or she wants to get, but life keeps popping up surprises, obstacles, he makes missteps. It's this period where it doesn't seem to be as easy to accomplish what he or she wanted as they originally thought. And so there's a little bit of journeying to do here. And so this is traditionally a longer part of the story. In an AA story, a typical classic AA story, the setup is, I was super shy as a kid. The inciting incident is, at 17, I had my first drink, and I thought, this is the best thing in the world. I want to drink this stuff all the time. And number three is usually a little anecdote about the time I lost my job, and then a little anecdote about the time I lost my wife, and then a little anecdote about the time I burned the house down, right? Things are getting worse and worse until we get to the main event, number four, which is the climactic moment. This is the most necessary scene. It's most probably something you've already jotted down notes about on your pieces of paper or your iPads or whatever. This is what the story is mostly about. The day I burned down the house and walked away and said, I'm never drinking again, right? It is, that's not my story, by the way. I'm just number four is where the shit hits the fan. You either fail or succeed. You get up the gumption to take the biggest step you can think to take, and the pieces are going to have to fall where they may after this. It's the point of no return. It's the most consequential and significant moment in the story, right? And oftentimes there's a eureka moment that either comes out of it or is the main event itself. Like in this AA story I just said, I think walking away from the burning house saying, that's it, I'm never drinking again, is really kind of the main event of that story. It's the reason the story is being told. And then the fifth beat is resolution. And resolution is the only beat that is actually optional some of the time. If the last thing that happens in the main event is so astounding and so speaks for itself, doesn't need any further commentary, you can't often, especially in a stage sort of story, a story told for the stage, you can sometimes just leave them wanting more, but the last thing that happened was so striking that you can just walk off. But in business situations, if you're telling a story to make a point to someone on your team about, for example, why we really have to stick at this project, the resolution is the best place to stick a very memorable phrase that very clearly spells out what I make of this experience I've been through. Okay, so now, in Chris's story, raising the stakes was, it had that great pattern of three in it, didn't it? It had the him trying to tell Big Bird, here's some bird seed, at least three times, and it just being mortifying each time. And in that scene, we had some great visuals. We had his uncle as with his arms crossed, smoking a cigarette, looking all disappointed. His mother looking freaked out, like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. Those are really, really emotional things for a kid to see, right? So we feel that the stakes are really raising. He's really going through kind of a journey, a nightmare, in that while he's trying to do the Big Bird line. And then the main event is he steps aside, he kind of goes into himself for a moment and thinks, wait a minute, I just need to pretend that I can do this. I just need to fake like I'm already really good at this and just let her rip. And he does, and it works. But the resolution in that story ends up being very useful for situations where you have to pep people up, remind people that there is a lot to be said about faking it till you make it. And notice, fake it till you make it, it rhymes, right? Oftentimes, if you're telling a business sort of story, that key line that encapsulates the controlling idea of the story, what the story is really about, what you want people to walk away remembering as the point of it, will sometimes be alliterative or rhyme or just be short and pithy and memorable, right? that if you said it a couple of times, it wouldn't irritate people, but it would be like, aha, yeah, yeah, I remember. So in this one, the resolution was time to reflect on that idea of fake it till I make it. So those are typical five beats of a story. And now what we want to do is give you, what did we say, 2 minutes? 2 minutes.
Yeah, something like 2 minutes.
2 minutes to think of your own story and think, what are some key things that you need to set up about who you are or where, what kind of social setting this took place in? What was the event, the inciting incident that kind of like pushed this thing into motion? 3, what was the period where things started getting harder, the plot was thickening, things were getting more complicated, maybe, you know, you felt like, oh my gosh, there's now more to be gained or lost. And then 4, what was the climactic moment where you really did your utmost, or the universe just answered things for you by taking a final dump on you? Or you had a eureka moment. And then 5, how might you want to end the story with a little bit of reflection? If you do want to include a resolution, how might you resolve it by kind of making it clear to us, here's what I'm getting at with this story. So jot down some ideas for the story you have in mind along those lines of 5 beats, and those can serve as a sort of an outline. Those can serve as bullet points for you to refer to in your actually telling the story.
And just want to add one more thing. The setup, especially in a short story, like the 2 to 3 minutes we're going to do here, often the first opening line is really important for a good story. Kevin and I, we run a story slam in New York City, and every week anyone from the audience can come and just tell their story. There was this one time when when my friend Bird, this awesome friend I had for many years, I had no idea that he had this story in him, but he just got up on stage and said one line that just blew the audience away. He stood up on stage and he said, "When I was 13, I found out my parents were swingers." And that just raises so many questions. This is like, how did you find this out? How do you feel about that? What's that like? And a good story will raise questions and then answer questions, especially... Is that funny? Especially if you've ever seen like some kind of running series show, like Lost or something. Like every episode raises a question, the next episode answers one, or raises another one.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go.
It's typical, like, if you see people manipulating the 5 beats, the most common way to do it is to start with the main event. And then when you get to the point where it's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Then you start the setup. It's a cliffhanger, right? So I remember hearing a story on the Moth podcast where a woman's like, so the car is going like 30 miles an hour. And I'm thinking, I have no choice. I have to get out. And I'm feeling the handle in my hand. And I don't know if I can do it. But I finally just yank and roll out onto the highway. And the audience is like, what? What's going on here? And then she goes back to set up her relationship with her abusive husband, right? And then gets back to this point eventually, right? So opening with something that's going to hook people, a striking question, a striking statement, or maybe even a little bit of action from the story.
But the main event's where we're going. It's like a flagpole, right?
Right. Yeah. The main event, yeah, I often think of the main event as kind of being like a golf flag that the story is ultimately weaving its way toward. So take some time and write down some ideas about details you might want to include that are key to your setup, inciting incident, raising stakes, main event, and resolution.
All right, I see some of you guys are still writing. Just kind of wrap it up a little bit. Take a few more seconds. And I know this is really kind of short, you know, we're cramming this in. Kevin teaches a 9-week class and we do 2 days. So like we're really cramming this. So if you were to do one of the other sessions with us, for example, you'd have a group of like 12 people and you'd have lots more time to work on these. So just try your best. Don't feel too, I mean, we understand it's a lot to work on in such a short period of time. But the next thing we want to do now is kind of practice that, so you'll have a chance to practice it a little bit and just kind of riff and improv your story with your partner. Okay, so forward. Yep, there we go. That was important. So the next thing, if you remember your partner from when we were doing the Breaking the Ice, your friends, you guys made friends, right? Everyone. I see some people with two empty seats on either side of them. That's a lonely story. But if we can just find our partner, and we're going to take, I think we're going to do like a 2 to 3 minute story. Try to keep, you're going to tell a story to your partner, and then we're going to give you like a little buzzer or something fancy. And then you'll switch, and you'll tell the other person your story. So we'll each get a chance to tell our partner. And remember, not remember, but just know that like, try not to have like a conversation. You know, we want to avoid that. You're actually telling the story, and the other person's listening, which is really important. You know, we have all these like buzzers and we're always like doing things at South By and we're so busy, but we really need to like listening is actually a really important part of the storytelling process. So give your partner the respect and there's some feedback prompts. Some of you guys have sheets, but yeah, give some feedback, you know, what was good about your story, how you might make it better. We're going to check back with you guys in about 5 to 6 minutes. Go.
That's 2 minutes from when you're
All right, guys, wrap it up a little bit. We're going to switch. Just finish up. All right, guys, so hopefully by now you switched, right? We switched. Keep going. Just switch. Give another person 2 to 3 more minutes. Keep it going. One more minute. One more minute. Seconds, wrap it up. We're gonna start again. All right, guys, back up here. All right,
okay, guys.
Hello.
Here we go.
All right, we're gonna do this. We have more stuff to say first.
Okay, guys, so we want to get a feel for how that was for you. Chris, you wanted to...
Yeah, did anybody... Everybody got a chance to tell a story? Did anybody hear... I'm just curious. Anybody hear any good stories? Let me see some hands. Oh, wow. Oh, everyone told a good story. I saw some really enthusiastic hands. Do the enthusiastic hands maybe want to out their partner and... try to get them to come up here. We need people up here. Yeah, this hand over here. All right, can we get you up here? Yeah, yeah. Oh, back here. Just out your partner. If you heard a good story, bring your partner up here. I see a lot of hands. We can get, just bring people up here. We can get like 10 people up here. All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay. I don't know.
Is this good? We got All right, cool.
All right, I think we should.
One,
cap
two,
it.
Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. All right, I think we're good now, yeah? Come on. You have a big smile on your face and you're like really excited. And we want you up here.
Okay. All right, let's do this. Let's do opening lines. Let's just hear people's opening lines and then decide which three of those that we want to hear the whole story.
Okay.
How's that sound?
All right, so just say your name and your opening line.
My name is Lee. My opening line is I'm lying on a road in a remote corner of the Bolivian Amazon with a broken leg.
All right.
Hi, my name's Alon. I'm 16 years old. I'm a virgin. I'm going out with Karen, and our hormones are raging.
My name is Sam. I'm a 17-year-old high school senior. My parents just got divorced, and my dad's moving to Chicago, and I got to move in with somebody else.
My name's Angie, and I should never be in charge of another living thing, especially if that living thing doesn't want to be controlled.
My name's TJ. I'm 22, and I'm lost in West Virginia, and I find a shack with boards on the window.
My name's Jason. Mine starts, if I had known that the parking ticket would have ended me up in the middle of a Nevada desert prison, I would have just paid the fucking thing.
I'm Will, and my line is, this past fall I got the chance to have a new mother.
I'm Shane. Mine starts, I'm in waist-deep water, in piranha-infested water in the Bolivian Amazon also. I can hear the caiman chirping. I'm wondering where the mother is, and my left hand is bleeding, and I have a machete in my right hand.
My name is Miley. I'm at the final of the Young Entrepreneur of Sweden. You have to be under 25 to win and have a product that launched. I'm 24-year-old and 9 months. And I just launched our product 2 months before. And I'm trying to act like I don't care.
I'm Adam. I was 20 years old, and I had a fire in my belly, literally.
I'm Ronnie. I own a bakery inside a theme park, and I've just dropped a wedding cake I have 15 minutes to deliver.
Hi, I'm Lindsay, and I'm a bitch.
Nice to meet you, Lindsay. I'm William, and I love the Beatles, but not Ringo Starr.
That was amazing. All right, let's give a big hand for everyone that came up here. That was awesome. That was awesome. You're a bitch? That was a good one. You guys have some great lines. We have a lot of people up here. I don't know the best way to do this. I think we're just going to go and get kind of like a round of applause. If you guys shout out some names, and we're just going to get three, and they're each going to tell a 2 to 3 minute story. So,
Bolivian Amazon, number one.
Bolivian Amazon. Woo! Okay.
Alone, raging virgin.
All right, this one's good. Maybe you can take a step forward. We'll narrow you down. All right.
Child of divorced parents.
Okay, good one.
Controlling and murderous.
Controlling and murderous. Oh, okay, maybe you're one of the contestants. Take it.
West Virginia Shack.
West Virginia Shack. Maybe you want to hear this one.
Traffic ticket ends me in a Nevada prison.
All right, you get two steps. They like you. You have a lot of friends here? That's a great story. One or the other, I'm just kidding.
Chance for a new mother.
Chance for a new mother. Okay, I'm going to take a step.
One step.
Bloody machete and stinky hands.
Finalist in Young Entrepreneur of Sweden.
Fire in my belly.
Dropping a wedding cake.
You guys are clapping for everything. This is going to be hard.
Bitch.
She stole my line. No. Ringo Starr sucks.
Kevin, I don't know. Did you? There was a lot of
the impression I got was I'm a bitch, Lindsay. Let's see, the parking ticket one, Jason, and why don't we go with fire in the belly, Adam? Two more? Three. That's what I chose. Three.
Oh, you chose that.
Yeah. Okay, so guys, here's how it's going to work. I'll sit in this seat right here and just come up and tell the story with one of our microphones. And when you hit 2 minutes, I'll wave at you. And that means you've got about a minute left. And when you hit 3 minutes, I'll wave harder, which means, all right, get off the stage. All right. Okay, great, great. Oh, well, I'll sit right here. I'll sit right here. All right, so who would like to go first?
I guess I do.
Awesome. Oh, wait, I need a timing device. I'm not just doing this out of Buddhist knowledge of passing time. All right, great.
Hi, guys. I'm Jason. When I was growing up, I was actually pretty nerdy. I'm still pretty nerdy, obviously, but super nerdy. I raised Mormon, but I thought I was tough. I thought I was a lot tougher than I was. And so me and my buddies, two of my Mormon friends, we all decided we're going to take a road trip to Yosemite. We get in my car. We got the old Dirty Bastard playing. We're ready to go. We're going from Reno all the way to Yosemite. And so we get in the car, and I bring the tiniest, absolute tiniest bag of mushrooms. Not enough to get anybody even a little bit remotely anything. But I put it in the car, and I hide it under the seat in a graphics card, like a case for like a Voodoo 2 graphics card. And so we're driving, and we're going fast, because you're in the middle of the desert. There's nothing to see, nothing to do but talk and listen to the old Dirty Bastard. And so... I even make the comment to my friend Dylan, who's sitting right next to me in his white Mormon shirt with his tie, and I say, I'm going 95 miles an hour right now. And no sooner do I say that than the cops come, and I see the lights behind me pull me over. All right? So I'm stopped, and I'm freaking out because I know that this tiny mushroom cap is sitting in this little box underneath my seat. All right? Now, the cop comes up, and he is exactly what you'd think a Nevada cop would look like, about 3'10", nice big set of sunglasses, a buzz cut, the whole bit, the mustache is right there, and he's knocking on my window, and he rolls it down and says, and he's like, boy, I smell weed, I smell booze, and none of these things are in the car, mind you. Nothing like that in the car. I think we were smoking like Chesterfield cigarettes because we thought we were James Dean, but otherwise everything was very clean. And I'm tripping out, and I'm like, no, absolutely not, sir. We're just going to Yosemite, blah, 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 real quiet. He takes me out of the car, and he gives me the DUI test, and I walk the line, I touch my nose, the whole bit. He puts me out in the car, apologizes, and said, it must have just been cologne. Sometimes cologne and booze smell the same. So what ends up happening is I go back, I give him my driver's license, I give him my registration. He goes back, I think I'm in the clear. I'm breathing lighter. I'm okay, we're going to go. Comes back and goes, you know, you had a parking ticket about 6 months ago you never paid. That made your license expire. You are technically under arrest. We're going to search your car.
Oh.
So I walk out of the car. I'm sitting there, and I'm just crying. And he's like, is there booze in the car, sir? No booze in the car. Is there weed in the car? And I'm very clear with it. There is no weed in the car. Finally, he gets it out. I cop to it because he's threatening to, like, take dogs and take apart my car. And so the next, you know, then about 15 minutes later, we all are taking our Yosemite trip. We spent in a jail in a little place called Biawawa. You should check it out. There's about 16 people, and all of them hate me. So kind of the moral to that is really, I have learned since then, really, is just to make sure I take care of the little things from now on if I'm going to sneak drugs across Nevada.
That was great. Okay, we're going to have our next storyteller.
Thanks.
So I went to school at Syracuse. I was 20 years old at the time, and if anybody's ever been to Syracuse, you'll know that the sun goes down somewhere around October and doesn't show up again until roughly May or, you know, June. And so it's really cold, and all you have to do is drink copious amounts between lots of studying. And so I was friends with seven other guys, and we were thick as thieves. We did everything together, and once, like, you and another friend, you can sort of get away with saying, like, I don't feel like doing that. But when you're with seven other guys, there's no way you can get out of, you know, a dare or a bet or something like that. So we were out at this bar one night that we typically frequented, and it's packed to the gills. Think like something that you're out at, you know, on 6th Street. It's all sweaty, and we're pounding beers, and there's pitchers rising up to the ceiling. And one of my friends, I'll call him Iggy, is this hulking, like, 6'5" guy, and he had the dumbest ideas. When I actually met him, he was missing his eyebrows and his eyelashes because he had blown them off playing with a crushed-up rocket fuel. So Iggy says, I've got an idea. I'm going to go get myself a shot of Bacardi 151, and I'm going to light it on fire, and I'm going to take the shot while it's lit on fire. And so we said, hey, that's a great idea. It's not us. I left that apart. It was his birthday. He was celebrating his birthday. So we said, okay, Iggy, that's your prerogative. So he goes up to the bar, and he gets the shot, and he lights it, and he does it, and he makes it look so simple, just so easy. It goes right down. And he says, I think from here on out, this is how we should celebrate our birthdays. And we all say, yeah, great idea. So 3 months later, it's my birthday. And again, the pitchers are stacked to the ceiling, and somebody goes to buy another round of drinks, and then there comes the shot put in front of me, except it wasn't just a little shot glass. It was like a jigger, a double shot. And now I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, I don't know that I can do this. And they grab a lighter, and they light it on fire, and I'm looking at this thing. The blue flames are licking off the top of the shot glass, and I'm bringing it closer to my face, and it's licking the end of my nose. And I said, all right, and I throw it back, and a little bit trickles off the side of my face. And I had stubble maybe a little shorter than Chris's, and it just flashes right off the side of my face. So now I have literally 151 in my belly, and it feels like a hive of bees trying to get out of my stomach. And I've got my fingers pressed into the table, and I'm trying not to throw up flames and beer and everything else. And because I know if I throw up, we're all getting kicked out, and I can't do that. And so they're all yelling at me, come on, pussy, keep it down, keep it down. And I'm holding on for dear life, and I actually composed myself, and they go, that was awesome, but you only finished half of it. So they relight it. And I pull it back again, and of course it goes out the other side of my mouth, and it lights my leg on fire. And I fight it down again, and I say through gritted teeth and soaking wet in beer from being, you know, put out twice, I said, who's next?
Awesome. Give a hand for Adam. You know Tums is here sponsoring things, right? That was amazing. Okay, we have one more story we're going to do, and then we're going to have the show later, and we're going to have to vote on who's going to come to the show at 4 o'clock in the convention center, and maybe if we have a little time, Kevin will give a little feedback on the winner's story, so a little critique of the things we learned today and why it was good, if we have time. So we have one more story, and Lindsay.
Hi. I'm Lindsay, and I'm a bitch, which normally results in tears and not clapping, so thank you, guys. And there will be cussing, so if you're a baby or a Mormon, maybe cover your ears. Being a bitch can be funny, like Daria style. Usually I'm a cock blocker when we get drunk, and I'll be like, that girl's not going to go home with you, man with one arm, which actually did happen. And sometimes it's like mean. I'll be crossing the street like here, and I'll say, I don't want your free shit. What is this shit? While everybody else is like, thank you. I needed this rubber bracelet. And sometimes I will catch myself, and I will be so embarrassed. Like the time I called because my couch had a stain on it, and you know how you can get those like life insurance policies for couches with stains. And I ended up, like, the whole thing devolved into, your job really sucks where you tell people they can't get their money back. And I'm like yelling at this person on the phone, and I really, there was a lot of self-loathing involved in it, where I felt terrible at the end. So I will think back on the one time in my life where I was happy and I wasn't a bitch. And that was when I played Raggedy Ann in a school play. Normally I played like Miss Havisham or somebody where at the end you're dying and everybody hates you because you're the protagonist, or the antagonist. But Raggedy Ann, I was awesome. There was this little bell triangle that would ding and I'd step forward and I'd say, "Home is where the heart is. And everybody loves their home." And my jaw would hurt by the end of it. And like, I'd get migraines from being that nice. But it was kind of awesome because in that moment, everybody loved you because you were Raggedy Ann. So sometimes when I'm talking to West Elm and I'm like, "You guys suck and I hate you and I'm going to tell you about it over tweets, multiple ones, bitches," I will think about Raggedy Ann and I'll go, "West Elm, you are awesome. However, I would really like for you to take back that item that sucked." Oh.
Thank you, Lindsay. That was great. I'm glad you came up. So can we get the three back up here again? We're going to do some quick voting and some clapping. This will be really quick, and then we'll let you guys go back to your South Buying. Okay, great. So we have Lindsay, Adam.
Lindsay, Adam, and Jason. Okay, great. You do the intro.
All right, ready? Jason. Yeah, okay, yeah, Jason. Lindsay Raggedy Ann. Adam, fire in his belly. I think that's pretty clear. Adam, you will be on Risk today at 4 o'clock. High five.
Awesome. Let me just say a couple of good things about what was nice about these stories. One of the things that Lindsay employed was a lot of like actual quoting and even somewhat impersonating or imitating people, which really brings things alive. Jason's story was really, really good about taking us through process, like, "I slowed down, he knocks on the window, he says this to me, now I'm thinking, oh my gosh, there's this thing under me." So he really did a good job at taking us through exactly what was going on. And Adam, right? Yeah, Adam's was full of like real strong imagery, like vivid sights and things going on inside the body as well. So some great stuff there. Keep in mind that you can see a lot more examples of this kind of stuff or hear a lot more examples on our podcast at risk-show.com. And we do one-on-one storytelling training even over Skype, so check us out at thestorystudio.org as well.
Cool. Thanks, guys, for coming. Really appreciate it. Come see Adam at 4 o'clock with Brian Brushwood, Violet Blue.